offering a humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, you're listening to us live from our studios at Radio Sai. This is the week on which we usually study the Ramkatha Rasvaini, as the beautiful story of Ramayana as written by Bhagwan. So as we always do, let us begin this week too by ruminating on the sweet and nectarous name of Lord Sri Rama.
Sri Rama Rama Rameti Rame Rame Manorame Sahasranama Tatulyam Ramanama Varanane Ramanama Varanane
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment on the Ramkatha Rasavahini. Before we dwell into that beautiful story, Prem, you know, I always feel that Bhagwan has this wonderful way of doing things and staying in the background. As they say, coincidences are miracles where the Lord remains anonymous. I feel yet another little thing has happened this fortnight. This is the fortnight for the Ramayana. This is also the fortnight when all around the world, the Dasara celebrations are on. And Dasara has got a lot of intimate connection with the Ramayana. In fact, one of the most significant things of Vijayadashmi. Vijayadashmi means the 10th day of victory. Dashmi is the 10th day and Vijaya is victory. And the victory being referred to there is the victory of good over evil, dharma over adharma, of Rama over Ravana. In fact, in many parts of India, on the Vijayadashmi day, a huge effigy of the demon king Ravana is made with all the 10 heads, and the details of the effigy depend on the financial resources available to make them. But in many parts, it is made to great detail, a huge effigy of Ravana and a person in the costume of Rama, you know, comes there. Usually towards the end of the Ramayana depiction, there will be a presentation on the Ramayana. Again, depending on the abilities and the resources, it can either be a complete drama on the Ramayana, or it can be a musical presentation on the Ramayana. If not anything, it is just a narration of the story of Ramayana, at the end of which a person often dressed as Rama comes with the bow and a flaming arrow, and he shoots this arrow in a predefined trajectory which goes and strikes this effigy of Ravana, and the entire effigy burns as everyone around dances and celebrates, celebrating the victory of good over evil and dharma over adharma. So I don't think it is coincidental that during this Dasara time, when the entire Prashanti has come vibrant, has become active, more active than usual, because Prashanti Nilayam is always vibrant and active, more active than usual, it is also the time of our fortnight of the Ramkatha Rasavahini. I am really grateful to Swami for this beautiful coincidence and offer our humble salutations at his lotus feet before we begin today's satsang. And yes, let us not forget Lord Hanuman, who is always present wherever the Ramkatha is sung. We offer our salutation to him too.
And even as you were saying about this tradition of firing an arrow at this effigy of Ravana, of course it's very popular in North India, where, you know, as you said, there's a huge structure. I remember once seeing a drama, a play in which there was this depiction, but with a very profound message. You know, there is this actor, as you said, he's supposed to take the role of Rama, and the next day he's supposed to shoot this arrow at this effigy. And the day when the thing is supposed to happen, he comes and says, "No, I cannot do it." So everybody is perturbed and they say, "Why are you doing this?" And it's generally considered a special chance to do that, you know, among the other roles that you get to play that role. And you're the one who's firing that arrow because that's like the crescendo of that whole celebration. But here is this actor who's saying that, no, I cannot do that. So they all start asking him what is the problem, and he appears very scared and paranoid. Then eventually he says that the previous night, Ravana comes in his dream.
Oh, okay.
And Ravana tells him, how dare you fire an arrow at me?
Hmm.
But the reason what Ravana says is very beautiful. He says, see, Rama was not any individual who came and shot at Ravana. Rama had those qualities, that's why we worship him as Purushottama. And just because you guys wear a disguise of Rama, become actors playing the role of Rama, it doesn't mean that you are worthy enough to kill Ravana. And none of you are worthy enough to kill me. How dare you come and try to kill me?
Wow.
You know, that's the beautiful message. But, you know, that's the tradition which goes with these kind of celebrations. Why do we take on the role, and why Ravana is killed? You know, I think in any culture, killing is supposed to be an act which is not acceptable. But almost all our festivals are about, you know, killing of one of the asuras. Deepavali is one festival like that, and the Navratri is, of course, apart from the killing of Ravana, it is also the killing of demon called Mahishasura.
Mahishasura.
Right. You know, and we kind of celebrate the death of evil, actually. It's not death of any individual. And doing that, taking on the role of divinity. So the entire Ramayana, as we've said many times before, the idea is to ourselves become Rama by bringing out those principles from within, and that's the whole idea of the study of Ramayana itself.
Apart from, you know, the killing of demons, as always, of course we can have an entire satsang on that, but as always there's a deep, subtle and deeper meaning to this rather than just, you know, killing of an asura. For example, even if you take the name of the asura we just took, which is Mahishasura. Mahisha means actually a buffalo.
Right.
And it is said that asura was in the form of a buffalo. The color of a buffalo is usually black. You know, when I was reading the inner significance about this, it is said that he stands for tamas. Tamas meaning sloth. And it's one of the lower gunas which one has to, you know, one has to go beyond tamas, then go beyond rajas. You use rajas, which is energy and passion and enthusiasm, to overcome tamas. And then you move to rajas, and then you use sattva, which is calm, peaceful, serenity, to go beyond rajas, to go beyond passion. You know, compassion to go beyond passion. But you don't achieve the ultimate even by going to sattva guna. You have to even transcend that. You have to transcend all gunas to become Gunatita or the Lord. So, this is the first step of the spiritual journey. Why I'm saying this is because this Dasara time is also the festival of Devi Navaratri, the nine nights of the Devi. In the nine nights, three nights are dedicated to Durga, three to Lakshmi, three to Saraswati. And there are elaborate discourses where Swami has said that these three stand for Karma, Bhakti, Jnana. They also stand for Icha Shakti, Kriya Shakti and Jnana Shakti. So, there is a lot of deep inner significance, and we see that playing out in Prashanthi Nilayam. You know, we see a Karma Yagna going on. Even as I was coming to the studio, I saw that there were boys getting off the trucks. They have just returned from the Gram Seva. That is a massive Karma Yagna going on where thousands of people are being fed and clothed on a daily basis, and hundreds of hearts of the students are being transformed because they are seeing what it means to have what they have and how service should become a part of their life. So that is a Karma Yagna going on, Kriya Yagna going on. There is of course the Bhakti Yagna that will be starting very soon, the Veda Purusha Saptah Jnana Yagna, which will start in the Purnachandra Auditorium, where you can sit and absorb the vibrations of love and devotion. And the Jnana Yagna, of course, through, there will be a series of talks by many scholars and people who have been close to Bhagwan. So there will definitely be a lot of wisdom exuding, and that is the Jnana Yagna. So definitely a time of intense activity and a lot of deep inner meaning. So on one hand, we need to enjoy the stories and festivities. On the other, we need to try to go deeper and understand the meaning and significance behind and try to adopt them into our lives.
Right. And as we've spoken in the other series where we spoke about Swami's life. I think one of the festivals which are being celebrated right from the beginning, right from the 1940s, is Dashara. Because, you know, in such a scale, because even more than, I think, Swami's birthday in the initial years, I think Dashara was celebrated very grandly. A new palanquin every day, and devotees would come, a new robe, different colors, and, you know, all kinds of things. And Swami would give visions in the form of different deities to different people. And we've heard of how Swami would pluck flowers from the garland he's wearing and throw, and that would become little gifts and coins and chocolates and things like that. I think there's such, apart from the grandeur and apart from the profundity.
I think you had also narrated when during one Dasara, when Swami was doing this, actually a Mahisha barged into the crowd.
Right. I think it was some mischief mongers tried to disrupt the procession, and then Swami, I mean, of course, you know, the thing is, one side, Dashara is such a profound and deep festival. On the other hand, it's so grand in Puttaparthi, as you said, you know, it covers all the facets. But there's so much of sweetness related to Prashantinilayam's Dashara because of Swami's association. I think I remember many years ago we were talking to one of the devotees who was there when the first Dashara Yajnam was conducted. And that was like 1961, 62. Swami was hardly known as somebody who was, not known for his knowledge as such. Because as we know, even today, Dashara draws some of the best scholars from Andhra Pradesh. You know, some of these people who conduct the Yajnam, they are like real scholars of Vedas. They're not people who take to Vedas part-time. They're like, that's their bread and butter, as well as their lineage has been dedicated to the study of the Vedas. Such people would come. In 1960s, Swami was not known for being a master of such things. Because he was a Swamiji, he was very different, and he drew a lot of crowd, but was he a master of these kind of things? So there was a lot of skepticism, and this person was saying that how on the very first day, Swami just went around casually walking around the stage when the Yajnam was going on. And he just stopped at one man who was very casually chanting the Vedas. Because probably he thought in his mind, who knows whether I'm chanting the right thing or the wrong thing. There's not anybody here scholarly enough to, you know, pick me out. And Swami came and very sweetly stood next to him and asked him, what are you chanting? And he said, Swami, I'm chanting this mantra or something. And Swami said, can you just chant it aloud? So he chanted it, and immediately Swami corrected some nuances, some mistakes he was doing. And right there he fell flat at Swami's feet. And from the next day, the Veda chanting really went up in quality. But you know, of course, probably they don't know about the story of Narayan Shastri and things like that. We've spoken before how even as a 13, 14-year-old, Swami really showed the world that he was the very repository of all wisdom.
He corrected Narayan Shastri in the Hamsa Gita.
Right, Hamsa Gita.
And yes, it has always been that. In fact, I remember, I think it was to Kamavadhani Garu, a respected Vedic scholar of his time, who, when he was asked the question whether, you know, whatever Swami says, is it really in the Vedas? You know, Swami says this is the Vedas, the Vedas say this, the Vedas say that, and he says, is it really true what he's saying? You can make out, you know, it is said that in the Ramkatha today, we will come to this very statement again, where it is said that you have to be of the level of the divine to understand the divine. Otherwise, you are not even at having the capacity to understand the glory. So, it is natural that a commoner asks a question like this. But Kamavadhani Garu, he was an epitome of Vedic knowledge. And he was the one who replied saying, what are you saying? It is not, you should not ask whether whatever Swami says, is it in the Vedas? Whatever Swami says is the Veda. You know.
Really, I remember the, he said in Telugu, which is Swami Mate Mantramu.
Wow.
He said every word of Swami is a mantra in itself. And so, you know, that's the thing you said about Jnana, Bhakti and Karma. I think Swami embodies all of that because he inspired devotion like you and I can't imagine if not for Swami. And of course, Kriya, the kind of work Swami did, ceaseless. Swami was ceaselessly doing work. And knowledge, of course, we've seen it because, I mean, just a couple of days back we were recounting how Professor Kasturi says, you know, when Swami was writing the Vahini series. And Swami started writing the Upanishad Vahini that time. And Upanishad Vahini was like a real challenge. You know, till then, Swami was writing general spirituality, but now he was talking about things which are established. He's going to take a established Upanishad and give a commentary on that. So when he started doing that, it seems every week Swami would say that this week I'm going to write a commentary on this Upanishad.
Hmm.
So, and each article would not take more than half an hour for Swami to write. And it takes a lifetime to read each Upanishad. And finally, when it came to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, that's supposed to be the most complex and the biggest among all the Upanishads. And Professor Kasturi writes, you know, he went around the whole of Puttaparthi and the places around looking for one copy of the Upanishad. Forget anything else. Forget the commentary. To get a copy of that, he was not able to procure it anywhere around. And even that Swami gives in 45 minutes. He says there is no library in Swami's room. There is not even a book on his table. And that really shows that it's coming right from the source.
And we are so blessed to have received it directly from the source. I think we can just go on and on in this. You were saying about how Swami symbolized the coming together of all the three. I remember a graphic made at Radio Sai, which is there in one of our articles, so beautifully. Sai, S-A-I, S stands for service,
right,
which is karma, which is kriya. A stands for adoration, which is bhakti. I stands for illumination, which is jnana.
Right.
It is there even in the name. So, coming back, we started on the note of Dasara. The word Dasara itself is derived from the words Dashahara. That is what they say. Dashahara means, Hara is the defeat of, and Dasha is the one who had the 10 heads. That is, so the term Dasara is derived actually from the defeat of Ravana at the hands of Lord Rama. So, again, coming back to the point with which we started from, it is so apt, so coincidental and so beautiful that we are discussing the story of Lord Sri Rama during the Dasara time. Indeed, blessed are we, and we have no doubts in our mind that this blessing, this grace is nothing but the love of our Lord, of our dear Swami. So, expressing our gratitude to Him once again, we shall continue where we left off. I think, Prem, we had spoken about how Sugriva and Rama meet and they pledge their friendship to each other. Sugriva promises Rama that he would help in finding his wife.
We spoke about that jewels incident where the bundle of jewels is brought and Lakshmana identifies the anklets and the toe rings, right?
Exactly. Right. Because he's been worshipping the feet of Sita, considering her as his mother. And that is the ideal that Lakshmana presents to the world. That is the ideal that Swami presents to all of us many times in his discourses about how ideal Lakshmana is. After that, in exchange, you know, Rama promises to restore Sugriva back to his kingdom. And, you know, he says he will correct the wrong deed that has been done by Vali. I think we also narrated the story of how Sugriva is in a place safe from Vali.
Right.
Of course, we narrated how Sugriva has been banished by Vali, but why has Vali not come and killed Sugriva? Because Sugriva is in a place where Vali does not dare to enter.
Right.
That's because he has...
He gets a curse from Matanga Muni when he, I think he tries to disturb him when he was living in that Kishkindha mountain, I think.
Actually, what happens is there's this demon Dundubi we spoke about.
Right.
Dundubi takes the form of a huge buffalo. Again, you see these buffalo theme is there during Dasara.
Right.
Tamas. So, again, you know, he comes and ravages the whole land there and he puts his horns into the ground, uproots trees, because Dundubi is told that there's somebody who is more powerful than you. This Dundubi is actually the brother of Mayavi.
Right.
Who was killed in the cave by Vali.
Right.
So when Dundubi attacks, Vali fights him for hours and kills him. So till there it's all good. But then, you know, Vali wants to show off his prowess. That is where ego kicks in. So he picks up the body of Dundubi and flings it.
Mm-hmm.
And as it is flung in the air, it's flying, it shatters to bits. And it is said that that creates a rain of flesh and blood over the ashram where Matanga Muni is. And Matanga Muni in his divine vision is able to easily comprehend that this is the act of ego and pride of Vali. And therefore he puts a curse that if ever Vali happens to step on this hill, step on this mountain itself, not the ashram, his head will shatter into pieces, which is why Vali is not coming to the mountain, and which is why Sugriva is hiding over there.
Right.
And this is where we had stopped, I think, last
time. Right. So we also said that Rama promises him that by the day, I mean, I think according to the Valmiki Ramayana's version, he says by sunset, Vali will be vanquished and you will get back your kingdom. And I think that this is where Swami says that now Sugriva is kind of bowled over by Rama and obviously by his appearance and divine appearance, but he's still having this doubt because according to him, Vali is the strongest person on earth, because I think that other story which we've also mentioned, how Vali takes on Ravana.
Mm-hmm.
And Ravana is actually in awe of Vali and his valor. And so Sugriva thinks that there is nobody who is stronger than Vali, and to beat him in any kind of a battle, you need to be really stronger than him. And he does not even express it. I think the way Swami puts it, he does not even express this thing. He just has this in his mind and he kind of describes Vali's valor.
Exactly. And you know, when Sugriva describes Vali's valor, the Lord actually doesn't need all these, but Rama is aware that Sugriva is having this doubt as to, Rama, you have promised me, but are you capable? This part, when I was reading Prema, I felt so much of empathy towards Sugriva, because I feel I go through this personally, not just once or twice, but every time. You know, I have seen the grandeur, the might, the glory, the love of Swami, and yet at the slightest problem in my life, you know, I tend to start getting into this kind of little doubt, whether, you know, Swami, you know, help me last time, but this time will you be able to do it? I'm frankly confessing, this happens. Of course, after some time, you know, I talk to myself, I convince myself, I remind myself of the glory, and warn myself of not falling into this maya of doubting Swami. But it happens, you know, it happens in spite of, just now Sugriva has experienced and he has felt in his heart that this Rama is the divine supreme and nothing can ever touch me with he guarding over me, yet he is having this doubt. And Rama sensing this doubt, what he does is interesting. This little parts Swami has not written about in the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini. I just happened to read it in the Valmiki Ramayana, so I think I'll as well narrate it. Rama goes and that body of the Dundubi, you know, decaying and rotting, reduced to mere bones, is still lying down there. Is still, not lying down, I mean, it's just fallen there, because that is where Vali had thrown it, right? It is said that Rama goes and just gives it a gentle nudge with his toe, and that transforms into a mighty kick, which takes the body, which takes that carcass actually, across the Indian subcontinent to some place in the Himalayas. Mm-hmm. That's what it is said. You know, it is evident that Rama does this to show his might to Sugriva. Means, your brother Vali threw it from one hill to another, right? I have thrown it all the way across the subcontinent now. But you know, the doubt, the demon of doubt is such a terrible creature. In the Valmiki Ramayana, it is written that Sugriva thinks at this point in time, instead of, the first reaction is awe at the power that Rama holds within himself.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately following that reaction, you know, he starts thinking, see, when Vali threw, it was a full blooded demon, full blooded body. It had all blood, flesh, everything.
Right.
So it was heavy and thick. Now this is a fully decomposed, hardly anything left kind of carcass. Naturally, it will be lighter. On one hand, while he's thinking that it is lighter, doesn't he have the ability and intelligence to think on the other hand that it has gone hundreds of kilometers, I mean 100 times farther than where Vali threw? But no, the doubt still remains in Sugriva's head, in spite of Rama having done this. And it is at this point, I think, that even Swami writes about this in the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini, that Rama steps in and tells Sugriva that, you know, I know that you are having these doubts. It's not a problem at all. You tell me, you can test my might, satisfy yourself, and then only we'll proceed.
Right. I think this part, Swami tells very beautifully, and during, when Swami was narrating this particular incident in, I think, 1996 Samokos, Swami actually draws a lot of important messages from this, you know, about the human mind and how it doubts. And as you said, you know, even though we see, because if you look at it one way, when you ask the question why Swami has to perform so many miracles, and you know, we have seen Swami curing so many people, we've seen Swami materializing things, and he would do it so that even though it is not for you and me, you know, it would be done in a manner that you and me would witness it. You know, Swami would materialize something in public view, so all of us see it. And I think it is to kind of put that idea in our head that here is somebody who can do these things. So that when we need his help, we tell ourselves that yes, he's possible, I mean, he's capable of doing this. No, I just happened to be chatting with one of these kids who came for this children's hour yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's been put some very nice habits in by his parents. He prays every day in the morning and before going to sleep, chant Gayatri 21 times and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to ask this kid, you know, why do we need to pray? So, you know, in their innocence, he says that because, when I go to school, suddenly the teacher might come and give me a test.
Hmm.
Or suddenly I might have to do something which I can't. So such times God helps.
Okay.
Okay. So I said, I asked him, do you pray even before going to an exam? He said, yeah, before going to exam, definitely I pray. I asked him, why? Because that is the time when we need God's help maximum. So I said, why your mother and father can't come and help you? No, they are not allowed to come inside the exam hall. But you know, God can come anywhere.
Oh, okay.
You know, so the idea was so clear in his head that there are things which nobody else can do, but God can do. And that is why we have to pray to God. And you know, his realm of help can stretch anywhere. He can come anywhere. He can do anything. I think that is one of the reasons why God, Swami, did some of these things right in front of our eyes. And the way Swami says that how this doubt arose in Sugriva's mind and how this is actually a sign of our monkey mind and how we need to handle that. Probably we'll listen to that clip. It's a little longer, probably 7 minutes. But I think the lessons which we can draw from what Swami says here are immense. So we'll listen to this part.
So this is a clip from Swami's discourse in 1996.
24th of May, to be precise.
ఈ మైత్రి జరగటం లోపల కొన్ని పరీక్షలు చేస్తూ వచ్చాడు సుగ్రీవుడు రాముల్ని.
అండ్ రామ స్టార్టెడ్ టెస్టింగ్ ది సుగ్రీవ.
మనం ఎవరితోనైనా విజయాన్ని సాధించాలనుకుంటే ఎదుట వ్యక్తి కంటే సాధించేటువంటి వ్యక్తి యొక్క శక్తి మరింత రెండింతలు అధికంగా ఉండినప్పుడే ఆ వ్యక్తి యొక్క శక్తిని మనం సాధించగలం.
ఇఫ్ యూ వాంట్ టు విన్ ఓవర్ ఎనీ అదర్ పర్సన్ వీ షుడ్ ఎక్సెల్ ది అపోనెంట్ డబుల్.
కాబట్టి వారిని జయించాలంటే వారి కంటే అధిక శక్తి ఉన్నటువంటి వారి మైత్రి మన కలిగినప్పుడే వారిని జయించడానికి వీలవుతుంది.
సో సుగ్రీవ థాట్స్ దిస్ వే, ఇఫ్ ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు కాంకర్ వాలి హి షుడ్ అప్రోచ్ ద పర్సన్ హూ ఇస్ మోర్, వారి
ఉండినంత శక్తి రాములకు ఉన్నదా అనేటువంటి డౌట్ వచ్చింది.
వెదర్ రామ ఇస్ పవర్ఫుల్ టు కాంకర్ వాలి ఆర్ నాట్,
సామాన్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క ప్రాకృతమైన జీవులకంతా ఇదే సందేహాలు.
దీస్ ఆర్ ద డౌట్స్ ఆఫ్ ద వరల్డ్లీ క్రీచర్స్.
తమకు తెలిసినది తక్కువైనప్పటికీ ఎక్కువైనటువంటి దానితో విమర్శలు జరపడానికి ప్రయత్నిస్తారు.
దే గో ఆన్ క్రిటిసైజింగ్ ఇన్ ఎ పాంపస్ వే.
అసలు ముఖ్యంగా ప్రజలందరూ తెలుసుకోవాల్సినటువంటి విషయం ఒకటి,
వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ థింగ్,
దైవ విషయం లోపల వాదోపవాదం చేసేటువంటి వాడు పరమ మూర్ఖుడు.
ఈజ్ అటర్లీ ఫూలిష్ మ్యాన్ హూ ఆర్గ్యూస్ ఇన్ రెస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ డివైన్.
దైవ విషయం లోపల ఇట్టిది అట్టిదిని నిర్ణయించడం ఎవరికి సాధ్యం కాదు.
ఇట్ ఇస్ ఇంపాసిబుల్ ఫర్ ఎనీవన్ టు డిసైడ్ దిస్ ఆర్ దట్ వే.
అది ఎట్టిది, ఇది ఎట్టిది.
Where are you and what is that?
అలాంటి అగోచరమైనటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యత్వం గురించి ఇట్టిది అట్టిదిని నిర్ణయించే అధికారం ఎవరికి?
No one has got any authority to decide the divinity which is on a bed.
ఏదైనా చేయవచ్చును.
God can do anything.
ఇది చెడ్డది మంచిదని ఎవరు నిర్ణయించే అధికారం లేదు.
No one has any authority to decide.
దైవ సృష్టిలో చెడ్డదే లేదు.
There's nothing bad in God's creation.
ఈ దృష్టిలో మాత్రమే ఈ అల్పత్వము అధికత్వము ఉంటుండాలి.
From your point of view, good and bad.
ఈనాడు నీవు ఫలం తింటున్నావు, ఇది చాలా మంచిది అని నువ్వు భావిస్తున్నావు.
Today you eat a fruit and you think it good.
రేపటి దినం ఆ ఫలమే మలంగా మారిపోతుండాలి.
And tomorrow
అది చెడ్డది అని నువ్వు అనుకుంటున్నావు.
The excretory matter is bad.
నీ దృష్టికి అది చెడ్డదే, కానీ భగవద్ దృష్టిలో అది కూడా మంచిదే.
But from your view point it's bad, but to God it's good.
ఫలము యొక్క వేరు స్వరూపమే ఈ మలము.
And fruit takes this
ఇది చెడ్డదెట్ అవుతుంది.
How do you say bad?
కనుకనే అన్ని మంచివే లోకములో.
ఆల్ ఆర్ గుడ్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్.
చెడ్డదనేటువంటిది ఏమాత్రము లేదు.
దేర్ నథింగ్ బ్యాడ్ ఇన్
దిస్ వరల్డ్. దృష్టి లోపల ఇది మంచి అది చెడ్డ అని అల్ప బుద్ధులతో నిర్ణయాలు చేసుకున్నారు. కనుకనే ఏది చేసినా ఇది మంచి చెడ్డ అని ఈ ప్రాకృతమైన దృష్టిలో వస్తున్నాయి.
బికాస్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ మీన్ లో మైండ్ యూ సే దిస్ ఇస్ గుడ్ దట్ ఇస్ బ్యాడ్.
ఇదే ప్రేయో మార్గము అన్నారు.
దిస్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ ప్రేయో మార్గం.
అనగా నీ దృష్టికి తగినంత మాత్రమే ఇది మంచిది అని నిర్ణయించుకోవటం.
యూ డిసైడ్ బేసింగ్ ఆన్ యువర్ లిమిటెడ్ లుక్.
శ్రేయో మార్గం అనేటువంటిది ఇది కాదు.
ఇట్స్ నాట్ శ్రేయో.
ఇప్పుడు నీ ఫలము మలంగా మారిపోయింది.
ద ఫ్రూట్ హెస్ బికమ్ వేస్ట్ మ్యాన్.
మలము నీవు చెడ్డదంటున్నావు.
యు కాల్ దిస్ ఎక్స్క్రీట్.
కానీ ఇది కేవలము శ్రేయో మార్గంలో ఇది మంచిదే.
బట్ ఇన్ శ్రేయో మార్గ ఇట్ ఇస్ గుడ్.
నిజంగా ఆ మలమే బయటికి పోకపోతే నీకు ప్రాణానికి ప్రమాదం జరుగుతుంది.
ఇది వేస్ట్ మ్యాటర్ ఇస్ నాట్ సెంట్ అవుట్ యుల్ బి పుట్ టు డేంజర్.
అది నివృత్తి మార్గము.
దట్ ఇస్ ఇన్వర్ట్
పాత్. అందులో కూడా మంచి ఉంటుండాలి.
దేర్ ఇస్ గుడ్ దేర్.
మంచిలో చెడ్డ ఉంది, చెడ్డలో మంచి ఉంటుండాలి.
దేర్ ఇస్ గుడ్ ఇన్ బ్యాడ్, దేర్ ఇస్ బ్యాడ్ ఇన్ గుడ్.
మంచిలో చెడ్డను చూడటము ప్రవృత్తి మార్గము.
టు సీ బ్యాడ్,
చెడ్డలో కూడా మంచిని చూడటము నివృత్తి మార్గము.
టు సీ గుడ్ ఈవెన్ ఇన్ బ్యాడ్ ఇస్ ఇన్వర్ట్ పాత్.
కనుక అన్ని మంచివే భగవంతుడు చేసేది.
సో వాట్ ఎవర్ గాడ్ డస్ ఇస్ గుడ్.
నీ దృష్టికి అది ఇది భేదం ఉండవచ్చును.
ఫ్రమ్ యువర్ పాయింట్ ఆఫ్
వ్యూ, కారణం ఏమిటి?
వాట్స్ ద రీజన్?
నీ దృష్టి పరిమితమైనటువంటిది.
బికాజ్ యువర్స్ ఇస్ నారో లుక్.
భగవంతుని దృష్టి అపరిమితమైనటువంటిది.
గాడ్ హెస్ గాట్ బ్రాడ్ మైండ్, బ్రాడ్ విజన్.
అందువల్లనే అగమ్యము, అగోచరము, అప్రమాణము.
దేర్ఫోర్ హిస్ బియాండ్ ఆల్ నార్మ్స్, నాన్
అపరెంట్. నీ దృష్టికి, నీ చేష్టలకు, నీ భావములకు కొన్ని ప్రమాణములు ఉంటున్నాయి.
దేర్ ఇస్ సర్టెన్ లిమిట్స్ యువర్ యాక్షన్స్ అండ్ యువర్ థాట్.
భగవంతుని దీనికి ప్రమాణములే లేదు.
బట్ గాడ్ ఇస్ లిమిటెడ్.
ఏది చెప్పినా అది రైటే.
వాట్ ఎవర్ హి సేస్,
ఏది చేసినా అది రైటే.
వాట్ ఎవర్ డస్ ఇస్ రైట్.
అనగా ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఇస్
భగవంతుని ఎందు స్వార్థము లేకపోవటమే రైట్. భేదములంత స్వార్థపరునికి మాత్రమే వస్తుంటాయి.
ఓన్లీ సెల్ఫిష్ పీపుల్ అంటే
స్వార్థరహితునికి ఈ భేదములే రావు.
ద వన్ హూ సెల్ఫ్లెస్ విల్ నాట్ హావ్
వారికి బాధరే ఉంటుంటాయి.
అండ్ అవర్ సెల్ఫిష్ విల్ బౌండ్ టు సఫర్.
కనుకనే
దేర్ఫోర్
జీవిత ధన్యము కావించుకోవలసినటువంటి వాడు
ఫర్ ద రిడెంప్షన్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్
రామ జీవితాన్ని అనుసరించాలి.
వన్ షుడ్ ఫాలో ద లైఫ్ ఆఫ్ రామ.
ఆ రామ జీవితాన్ని అనుసరించడం లోపల కూడాను అడుగుజాడల్ని అనుసరించాలి.
వైల్ ఫాలోయింగ్ ద లైఫ్ ఆఫ్ రామ వీ షుడ్ ఫాలో హిస్ ఫుట్ స్టెప్స్.
కనుక ఈ యొక్క సుగ్రీవునికి ఈ విధమైన సందేహం వచ్చి, ఈ సందేహం తీర్చుకుంటే కానీ నాకు మనసు తృప్తి కాలేదు అన్నాడు.
సుగ్రీవ హ్యాడ్ దిస్ డౌట్ అండ్ హి వాంటెడ్ క్లారిఫికేషన్.
హనుమంతుడు,
హనుమాన్
మంచి పదములతో, వినయ విధేయతలతో రాములకు చెప్పాడు అతని సందేహాన్ని.
హనుమాన్ కన్వేడ్ ద డౌట్ ఆఫ్ సుగ్రీవ ఇన్ సాఫ్ట్ స్వీట్. రాముడు
నవ్వాడు.
రామ లాఫ్ట్.
ఇది కేవలము సామాన్య జీవుల యొక్క ఇది సహజాలే.
ఇట్స్ క్వైట్ న్యాచురల్ ఫర్ ఆర్డినరీ.
ఈ సందేహాలు రావటం సహజమే.
డౌట్స్ దే కమ్.
దీనికి కారణం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ద రీజన్?
వాని అల్పత్వమే దీనికి కారణం.
దేర్ మీన్నెస్ ఇస్ ద కాజ్.
వీడు తెలివితేటలు గలవాడు అనుకుంటారు, చాలా తప్పు.
యు థింక్ యువర్ ఇంటెలిజెంట్? నో.
మంచి మేధాశక్తి గలవాడు అనుకుంటారు, చాలా తప్పు.
యువర్ ఇంటెలెక్చువల్.
మేధాశక్తి తెలివితేటలు ఉన్నటువంటి వాడికి సందేహంలే రావు.
ఇఫ్ యూఆర్ రియల్ అండ్ ఇంటెలెక్చువల్ ఇంటెలిజెంట్ వన్ యూ నెవర్ డౌట్.
సందేహం ఉన్నటువంటి వానికి అల్పులకే సందేహము.
ద వన్ హూ ఎంటర్స్ డౌట్స్ ఈజ్
వాళ్ళ జీవితమే అల్పత్వము.
దేర్ లైఫ్ ఈజ్ మీన్.
కనుక ఈ సుగ్రీవుడు అల్పుడుగా కనిపిస్తున్నాడని నవ్వుకున్నాడు రాముడు.
రామ వాజ్ స్మైలింగ్ లుకింగ్ ఎట్ ది మీన్ లెవెల్ ఆఫ్
కానీ అల్పుడు కాని అధికుడు కాని ఈ సమయంలో నాకు అవసరమే.
బట్ ఎట్ దిస్ మోమెంట్ ఐ నీడ్ హిమ్.
ప్రపంచంలో పనికిరాని వస్తువు ఒక్కటి లేదు.
దేర్ ఇస్ నథింగ్ విచ్ ఇస్
యూస్లెస్. అన్ని పనికొచ్చేటువంటివి.
ఆల్ ఆర్ యూస్ఫుల్.
ఒక పొరక పుల్ల కూడాను పళ్ళు గుచ్చుకోవడానికి పనికి వస్తుంది.
ఈవెన్ ఎ స్మాల్
పొరక పుల్ల, స్మాల్ స్టిక్,
ఎ స్మాల్ స్టిక్ ఇస్ ఆల్సో యూస్ఫుల్.
కానీ ఇంకా ప్రాణమున్న జీవి పనికిరాడా?
బట్ డోంట్ యూ థింక్ దట్
కనుక ఈ అల్పుడు కూడా ఇప్పుడు నాకు అవసరమే.
ఈవెన్ దిస్ లో పర్సన్ ఇస్ ఆల్సో.
ఎందుకనగా హనుమంతుడు వారి పక్షంలో ఉంటున్నాడు.
హనుమాన్ ఇస్,
హనుమంతుడు చాలా శక్తివంతుడు.
హనుమాన్ ఇస్ పవర్ఫుల్.
కానీ ఈ అల్పుడైనటువంటి యొక్క సుగ్రీవుని ఎందుకు ఏ శక్తులు ఉంటున్నాయో.
వాట్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ కెపాసిటీ దట్ హీ హ్యాస్.
కనుక గుర్తించినప్పుడే దీనికి తెలుసుకోవడానికి వీలవుతుందని.
ఐ షుడ్ నో అండ్ ఫైండ్ అవుట్.
తప్పక నీ యొక్క పరీక్షకు నేను నెగ్గుతానన్నాడు.
హి సెడ్ ఐఎమ్ రెడీ టు ఫేస్ యువర్ టెస్ట్.
ఐదు వృక్షములు నీటుగా ఉంటున్నాయి సరిగా.
దేర్ ఆర్ ఫైవ్ ట్రీస్.
వరుసగా ఉంటున్నాయి.
దేర్ ఇన్ ఎ సీక్వెన్స్.
వృక్షములు
వాట్ ఆర్ దే?
అనగా ఒక విధమైనటువంటి ఫిక్స్
ద ఫారెస్ట్ ట్రీస్.
దాన్ని ఒక్కతూరి కొట్టమన్నాడు.
హీ వాంటెడ్ దట్ ఆరో షుడ్ బి షాట్ ఎట్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ ట్రీస్ ఎట్ ఎ స్ట్రెచ్.
ఒకనాడు కొట్టినప్పుడు ఐదు చెట్లు కూడా దాటినాయి.
వాలీ కుడ్ షూట్ దెమ్ ఆల్ ఎట్ వన్ స్ట్రెచ్.
ఈ రామును కొట్టేటప్పటికి ఐదు చెట్లు దాటి కొండను కూడా దాటి అవతల వేడింది.
When Rama shot the arrow, not only five trees, it crossed the mountain.
Ramulu paadamu paina padi
Sugriva fell on the feet of Rama.
Nannu kshaminchamani cheppi
sought his pardon.
Nenu chaala alpagnudanu.
I mean me.
Aneka baadalaku padi nenu ee vidhamainatundi anumanalu guri ayipoyanu.
Because of long suffering I am having all these doubts.
Nannu rakshinchamani agni sakshiga pramanam chesadu.
So he sought his pardon. He wanted to be protected and made all the oaths.
So that was the clip. But I think more than the topic of why Sugriva gets that doubt, I think Swami was explaining the acts of an avatar, how it is mistake on our part to make pass judgments on that. I think very, very beautifully Swami was describing the difference between the spiritual perspective and the worldly perspective.
Shreyo and the Preyo.
Right, when you see bad even in the good act, that is the spiritual worldly perspective. The worldly perspective. When you
bad
see
even in the good guy,
right,
huh?
When you see good even when there is apparently a bad act being performed, And that is good. And I think the very, very beautiful point, which again Swami will repeat in the Ramakatha Rasvahini also, is as long as selflessness is the intent which is driving an act, that act can never be wrong, however it may appear so. And
as a corollary to that, I feel, you know, if it is selfishness that is driving an act, then it can never be right, however right it may appear. A task, an act might appear very noble, very large-hearted, very kind, very charitable. Yet, if it is selfishness that is driving that whole thing, the act becomes mean. Just as Swami says that if it is selflessness driving an act, however bad it might appear, because it is having selflessness as the root, it becomes good.
Right. And you know, it's so subtle, especially in the Ramayana. Because as we have said, I think before, the Ramayana, the lessons are all very, very subtle, and you'll have to really go into it. If you see in the Mahabharata, actually it's very, very clear. Where the intention is very obvious, you know, but trying to ensure that whatever is done is within the legal framework, within what appears like dharma, what is accepted in the society, and say that no, it's after all right, what we did was right. We cannot be blamed because the actions were within the moral code. But where it was so obvious that the intentions were wrong. But here it is so different. The intentions are so subtle, even between Vali and Sugriva. The difference was very, very little. The difference in mistake was so little. And that's again what we will see here, but we'll just complete what Swami narrated here, especially that test which Sugriva gave. Because Sugriva goes on to tell Rama that when they were youngsters, they had this competition between them, who was stronger. And they had these row of palm trees, and Swami says fig trees, exactly, you know, supposed to be very sturdy trees. And Vali fells about three trees, I think, right?
No, Sugriva does three, Vali does five.
Vali does five.
Right. Here Swami in the discourse said five. But
Swami says more than five, but he doesn't keep the number. Right?
Oh, okay. He said more than five here. In the Ramakatha Rasavahini and in Valmiki's Ramayana, it is said that there were actually seven in a row.
Right.
Sugriva manages to pierce three trees, while Vali pierces five trees. And when Rama picks an arrow, fits it and shoots, it pierces all the seven trees and, you know, goes beyond.
Right. Carries the trees and bangs it on the hill. That's what Swami writes. And in fact, Swami also adds another detail that when they come to this row of trees which Rama is supposed to shoot, Sugriva sees the trees and he says that they're actually twice as thick as the trees which Vali and Sugriva had shot down. So he thinks in his mind that even two of these trees is good enough. It shows that Rama is as strong as Vali or even stronger. But then Rama, you know, takes it much beyond that. And after that, this beautiful scene comes. You know, immediately Sugriva melts. He realizes whose presence he is in. You know, he's not any ordinary prince of Ayodhya or something like that. So he breaks down and he says, I'm so fortunate to have forged a partnership with you. And this is more important to me than even winning over Vali. And that's what he starts.
In fact, he says that, you know, Rama, the joy that I'm getting by beholding you, I feel, you know, I've been so foolish in trying to get angry on Vali or have ideas of revenge towards him. All that have melted away now. I have no desire for my kingdom. I have no desire for ruling. I have no desire to avenge myself. My only desire is to stay with you and serve you, because, you know, this is a reaction that often happens when we get a glimpse of the glory of God. When you get that glimpse of the glory, you just want to give up everything and just be with God. When I was about, I think, 12-year-old or something, I remember we had visited Prashanthi Nilayam. I had come along with my parents and my Balvika's guru. Now, along with the Balvika's guru, there was another man who had come. First time he was coming to Prashanthi Nilayam, and he had just been introduced to Swami and all that. So this was one of the first few times when I had come to Prashanthi also. So Puttaparthi was new for me. Why I'm remembering this very vividly is, after darshan that day when I came, I saw that this man had become like mute. Almost he had stopped speaking. He was continually shedding tears. And he said, I don't want breakfast. We went for breakfast. He walked away. So that's it. After breakfast, we went, attended bhajans. And then when he came back, I saw that this lady who was my Balvika's guru, she was sitting outside her room in Prashanthi Nilayam. And when we went, she said, no, don't enter the room. So why? After some time, the room door opened and one lady and her child come walking out. It is this man's wife and son. They are weeping. I was wondering what happened. They are weeping and weeping. And then I overheard them telling the Balvika's guru that this person is so overwhelmed. He says, now I don't want anything. He's just wearing a dhoti. He's lying down in Shavasana inside the room. And he says, I want Swami, nothing else. And he has given up.
Mm-hmm.
He's refusing to come back home and he doesn't want to do his job. Nothing. You know, I was so amazed and I felt, oh my God, this is the kind of impact Swami has on people. That is definitely, you know, that impact is very, very true. But, well, completing the story, you know what, that lasted only 2 days. Third day, this man packed up, went, and I don't know, after that, I have come to Prashanti. When I came to Prashanti, I never knew what happened to this person after that.
Mm-hmm.
So, was this impact that Swami had on him false? No, it is true. But what I feel is, we receive the impact and at that time, become full of surrender. Like how, you know, Sugriva also. You know, Sugriva says, I don't want anything. I don't want to go and defeat my brother. I don't want revenge. I felt that anger, hatred and all, you know, is such a terrible thing. But today I feel that even anger and hatred have become instrumental in me meeting you, Rama. All this was towards you. Sugriva in one moment is able to see his entire life as a drama that has been so beautifully scripted by the Lord, where the grand finale or culmination is him meeting the Lord, and having come to this finale, he doesn't want anything else. I'm sure each one of us have felt, if not the same, at least something of that when we have had our own kind of experiences with Swami. But my problem and my question is, how long does that sustain? Because very soon we are back. Just like that man who went back to his office, wife and children, and continued.
That's the thing, you know, we ourselves have narrated so many times the incident about Seshagiri Rao, that first look of Swami, the change it brings, and we've spoken about how people came and they saw and they got conquered and all that. I mean, going back to that, today being 15th of October, it's actually Shirdi Baba's Mahasamadhi Day, and it would be apt to quote something which he used to say, you know, when somebody asked him, why is that so many devotees come but only few hang on? And he shows the mango tree and he says that how many flowers are there? How many of these flowers eventually become fruits? How many of those fruits eventually ripe and
become
ripe and are worthy of eating? So it's similar to that. You know, so many people come and I think that that first look of Swami or that first interaction which you have is so powerful. But not many really are able to foster that. In fact, even in that, there's an chapter in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram where Swami starts writing letters to the prisoners after that Kalpagiri episode. Swami starts writing and all of them are overwhelmed, all of them are writing letters to Swami, and Swami also responds to them. Towards the end of the chapter, Professor Kasturi writes that not all of them really fostered this chance they got into transformation. You know, many of them remained in the prison and probably they came out and they did more crimes and went back inside. But there were only a handful who actually held on to that inspiration. A man, you know, he writes about one particular prisoner in that chapter. You know, he was a man who was very similar to Kalpagiri, who also wanted to murder his wife. And in fact, he wanted to murder his wife and kill himself. But unfortunately, he got saved. He tried to rip his stomach apart, but he got saved, and how he had to undergo multiple surgeries even as he was staying in the prison. And eventually the dietitian say that he cannot eat any cooked food. He has to eat only food which is soaked and which is just boiled or steamed. So he goes on to say that, Swami, no other way I could have stuck on to a sattvic diet in a prison. So you have made it this way. And you know, he completely changes and he really becomes a true devotee. And as we are,
you know, this is what Swami was saying, to have the ability to see good even in the bad. You know, getting your stomach ripped off, having multiple surgeries, such a bad thing anybody can think of, but he's able to see the good in that.
Right, and there is no place where it cannot happen. Like in the prison, in the midst of whom we call as people who cannot be changed, you know, such is the place is the prison, and there if you can find such inspiration and to foster it and ensure that it really, you know, makes you blossom. But it doesn't happen to everybody, you know. This is something which I think we all have to remember. Because I think we've said this many times, you don't make a promise when you're happy. You don't make a decision when you're angry. Because it's all height of emotion. And when you see Swami or when you come to Prashanthi Nilayam for the first time, you're so excited, you're so thrilled by, you know, the silence. I've seen so many people who say, oh, it's so peaceful here, I would like to settle down here. But are you ready to live a life of such frugality? Are you ready to live a life which is so simple, which is so focused on Swami? It is not wrong to, you know, brush aside that feeling, but I think it is important to calm yourself down, take it and, you know, let it seep in quietly and little slowly.
No, in fact, I feel many places, you know, these mediums, channelers of Swami, all these who are cropping up, they are actually making use of this euphoria itself. You know, in the first, emotionally, when they hit, you know, they make that emotional impact on you. You know, those who say that Swami speaks through him, he is able to see Swami, all these channelers and mediums who are doing this for obvious selfish ends, they make use of this emotion. That's the thing, you know. That's why you see, none of these places have like an ashram where a person, a devotee, can go and stay for a month. Because in a month, all this will vanish. I have this question to ask. If you really feel there is Swami in that place, or this person is directly in touch with Swami, why don't you go there and stay for a month? That would happen in Prashanti, right? People used to, I remember some of the Westerners would spend half a year in their country earning their livelihood, and other half come and spend in Prashanti. And even to this day, we have people who do that, at Prashanti. But that is not what is happening in so many of these channelers' places, you know. They go there just for a day or two and come back on a high. It's almost like narcotics or drugs or, you know, alcohol. It gives you a kick. Because that is the difference between divinity and these other things. That divinity is not about emotion. Spirituality is not emotion. It is something that has to be fostered, and perseverance. You know, we spoke last time in our topic on quality of sadhana. Two things. One is intensity, one is perseverance. The Lord Darshan gives a big kick in the intensity. But are we able to persevere? See, with the example that I narrated of that man, that kick he got, but after that, I mean, what happened? He couldn't nurture it. But the beautiful thing, as Swami explained in his discourse, is that if we are able to nurture it and prove to be worthy devotees, the Lord will go to any extent. As we shall see later on, Sugriva turns out to be...
Right. I think many of our listeners will be wondering why, after all, Sugriva is trying to say something so beautiful and why we went off into a discussion like this.
That's what.
Because the sequence of events shows that, you know, how it was just an emotional outbreak.
No, even here, Prem, you know, I was reading in Valmiki's Ramayana.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happens after actually Rama brings down these seven trees? Sugriva thinks that as teenagers we shot arrow.
Okay.
After that, Vali has grown much stronger. So Rama has proved to be stronger than a teenage Vali. More powerful than an adult Vali. You know, so though he's overwhelmed, falls at Rama's feet and he's saying that you are the supreme, after some time this doubt is what is coming in his head.
Right.
So this is, I feel we are all like Sugriva. But the point I was trying to make before we go ahead is that one person who held on was Hanuman. And Swami explains, Rama knows that Sugriva is, you know, they say friendship is between equals. Sugriva is not actually worthy of friendship in the level of which Rama is there. Of course, he is an equal to Rama in the sense that he has lost his wife and he is faced injustice. That way they are equals, but in their spiritual level, there is a world of difference. And Swami says, yet the Lord is ready to bypass that rule and have friendship with Sugriva because he wants Hanuman. You know, Hanuman sitting here, definitely the top form boy for Rama, I feel. You know, I'm sure he will rejoice at the special place that he has in Rama's heart. Hanuman tears apart his heart and we see Rama there. I'm sure if Rama tore apart his heart, we would see Hanuman there. That is the kind of love, that is the kind of sacrifice that the Lord makes when the devotee's devotion is persevering as well as intense, like how Hanuman's is. I feel that is why Swami placed Hanuman as a role model right on top of the hill where students from all the hostels, primary school, higher secondary or university, can see him and derive inspiration from him.
Right, you know, many times when you look at it, you see this even with Swami, you know, he would do things which he would otherwise not do, because by doing that, there will be some devotee who will be drawn closer, or some devotee who will benefit with Swami's proximity. Someone who is telling, you know, Swami always says, I am not here for publicity, I don't like publicity. But the first thing when he saw Professor Kasturi, he says, you can come and write my you know, biography.
Hmm.
It's almost like, you know, it's a way of attracting you. If that is the way I will attract you, I mean, I don't mind stepping down in my policy of not having publicity. The same thing which Swami said when he came here to inaugurate the studio. He said, I have nothing to do with this, you know.
Nothing to gain from
right?
this.
Right. He wants to broadcast my discourse live across the oceans. I have nothing to gain from it. But it will give him happiness. You know, he has been such a good devotee. It will give him happiness. I've allowed him to do it. I think even if you and me are sitting here and talking, that's exactly what Swami is probably doing. You know, this is the only way to keep these fellows at my feet. Let them talk. Let them enjoy. Let them revel
in this aspect, Prem, I feel so overwhelmed and grateful. Because, you know, for one, Swami never thought of what he wants or what, you know, what is dear to him. Whatever way we are able to offer our love and devotion for him, he is happy to accept it. And I really don't think we will get another Lord who is so compassionate, who is so merciful. All of us are doing what we like to do, and yet we have the opportunity to make it into an offering to Swami. That is the kind of love and compassion that the Lord embodies.
Absolutely.
At this point, I think, Prem, we can take a little break. Don't go anywhere, dear listeners. We'll come back and continue what happens next, because Rama now inspires Sugriva to go and challenge his brother Vali into a fight, and that we will come to after this little break. So, be there, hang in there.
Yeah.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are in that point where Sugriva is just tested Rama's abilities, and he has confirmed for himself that Rama does have the prowess to beat Vali. And we are talking about that incident where he gets overwhelmed emotionally and he says that, Vali, I've always looked at him as my enemy, but today I know that he has been my benefactor because he has been instrumental in me meeting with my Lord. And the beauty is of the Ramakatha Rasvahini. The sad thing, of course, is we are reading it in English. I'm sure that it's so much more poetic and so much more sweet in Swami's Telugu. Because some of the way Swami puts it across, one particular point where Swami says is, Sugriva tells Rama that when you are in a dream and you're having a fight with somebody, the moment you wake up from the dream, the fight is gone, the enmity is gone, the hatred is gone. So he says, my fight with Vali is like that. It's almost like in a dream, and me meeting you is my moment of waking up. Wow. So that enmity and hatred is gone. I have no anger against him, even though he has done so much injustice towards me. So beautifully Swami is putting that, and it's again such a beautiful message which Swami is sending across in that. Of course, Rama's response to this emotional outburst at this point is that Rama is patting him and, you know, he's stroking him in behind.
And then, actually, you know, he even agrees. He says, Sugriva, right, what you're saying is correct.
Right.
But still, you know, you go and fight.
Rama tells him that, but I have given my word that I will, you know, put you as the emperor of this realm and you cannot escape from that duty. So now you have to go and challenge Vali.
So this is what is told, and he also assures Sugriva that you don't worry, I am there. I am there with you. I will stand by you. And that is what gives courage to Sugriva. And the next day, they set out. The brothers, Rama and Lakshmana, along with Sugriva. Hanuman is left behind at the hill resort wherever Sugriva was taking refuge. And as they go, it is said that Sugriva goes to the gates of Kishkindha, the city of Kishkindha, and bellows out in all his might. He shouts a challenge to his brother Vali. And Swami's beautiful description, he says that Vali, who is sleeping, gets up like a cobra that, you know, lifts its hood when somebody steps on it. Yeah. So Vali also gets up and instantly, you know, he wants to go and fight. That is when his wife Tara, Wali's wife Tara, you know, she tries to speak some sense into Vali. Just now you were telling Prem as to how one must not take a decision when one is angry. And this is exactly what Vali has done here. He is enraged. A brother whom he has smashed and whom he does not expect to see at all because his brother is scared for his life. And he is taking refuge in a hill where Vali cannot go. Otherwise Vali would have chased him there and hunted him down. That brother is now coming back and shouting a challenge to him. He just wants to go and smash him again. That is when Tara tells Vali that, listen, you know, we have got news that you yourself know. She refers to the information that Vali already has. She says, you yourself know that he has met with two brothers, two princes, they say. And I'm sure those two are not ordinary people. Why? Because though I have not heard anything about them or what they have done, the confidence with which Sugriva is coming here. You know, Vali, remember how you have defeated him, dethroned him, how he used to be shiver in fear at your presence. He is coming and bellowing with such a might which is shaking the walls of our city. Don't you see something fishy here? Vali is not able to. You know, he just pushes her off aside and says, you coward. You're such a cowardly woman. You know, this is not the time to decide. I've also heard about the glory of Rama. It's not that I don't know the glory of Rama. But the thing is, I cannot shy away from war. Because this is my duty to fight. And plus, remember, Tara, that I am also a devotee of Lord Rama. He doesn't say actually that he is a devotee, but he definitely expresses his love and regard to Rama by saying that I am confident that the nobility of Rama is such that he sees both me and Sugriva with equal vision.
Right.
So I just cannot entertain the thought of him supporting one over the other. I don't think so. So what if he is present there? both of us are equal in his eyes. See, imagine, that is how the Lord is perceived, even by a person who doesn't know much. So Vali is saying that much is there, so then why should I fear? It is just Sugriva that I have to face. So what if it is in the presence of the Lord? It maybe makes it even more wonderful that it is in the presence of Lord Rama, but I will go smash this brother and come.
And of course, he even says that even if I am to be killed, what greater honor than to be killed in the hands of Rama? You know, the same sentiment which Maricha expresses before he takes the form of the golden deer. But you know, this is probably I don't know how much of this is there in the Valmiki Ramayana. This aspect of Vali's approach towards Rama. Because this is very, very sweet, and I feel he's one more character who's redeemed by Swami's Ramakatharaswini. The exchanges which come later are truly very, very profound. But the next incident which happens is also very subtle in its message. Because Sugriva goes and calls out to Vali, and finally Vali comes out, and a duel takes place. You know, they start fighting and they start showering blows at each other. And all the while Sugriva is thinking that any time Rama's arrow will come and
finish
Vali. But then he goes on fighting and he gets beaten badly and battered. It comes to a point where he's thinking that probably I have to... Rama is waiting for me to give my best. So at the end of it, Rama will come, as Swami would often say, you know, you will have to give your best, and that is after which you will have to leave the rest to God. So he's thinking that probably when I am exhausted, then Rama will take over. But that is not the case. He's completely beaten, and at the point where he has to save his own life, he flees. He runs away from there, and then he goes, and this is the point where we said, you know, completely different. In the Ramakatha Rasvaini, it's the next page. You know, the previous page, Sugriva is saying, oh, Rama, my life is redeemed, and you know, this is the moment, and I don't need to beat Vali. And in this next episode, he says that, you know, why have you deserted me like this? This is so unfair. I took so much courage that you're by my side, and you did not come to me. And why did you want to humiliate me like this by asking me to go and call Vali for a duel? And this is what happens.
Two things come to my mind at this point, Prem. One thing is what you were speaking just now about Sugriva running away. Swami would often say in his discourses that if your desires are fulfilled, you fill your wall with my photos. The minute your desires are not fulfilled, you take down all the photos and stop worshipping. This is definitely not a sign of a spiritual person. Equanimity and absolute faith at all times, that is a sign of a true devotee. The other point that I wanted to make is when you said that there is a difference in the account as given by Swami in the Ramakatha Rasavahini and as given in the Valmiki Ramayana.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the first time we are encountering this difference. Swami in his discourses says, you are not one but three. The one you think you are, that is the body. The one the others think that you are, that is your mind. The one that you really are, which is the soul, the God, whatever, your true inner being. Actually, if you look deeply at this statement, definitely when I talk about myself, I'm always talking about my body only. And when others talk of me, you know, there are some people whom I have not met actually. We might have just corresponded over email, we might have just had a talk on the phone. And yet, sometimes, you know, it might be virtual. I have had cases where somebody comes and waves to me and says, Saram brother, we are friends on Facebook. And I would not even have known him or her. So, there are ways where others know us without even having interacted or come in contact with our body. So therefore, definitely it is true that the one others think we are is actually our mind. They judge us based on what we think, how we speak, all these things, you know, our mind, the expression of our mind. But what we truly are, neither we ourselves know, neither do the others know. That is the reason why we need a guru or avatar to come and teach us. And that is why I feel we see these differences, because at best, Valmiki or any other writer could have understood the minds of Vali and Ravana. Everybody would have judged them based on what they think or what others think. Only Swami, only the avatar has the ability to see a person as he or she truly is. That the third one, the one that you truly are, that is God, that is divine, that only Swami is able to see. And I feel that is the reason why, see, many times what one truly is and what one thinks in the mind may match. That is what Swami says, Mahatmanam, Manasekam, Vachasekam, Karmanyekam, Mahatmanam. So there are many Mahatmas in Ramayana. And therefore, what they are, what others think of them and what they are appearing will all be same. In the case of Hanuman, in the case of Lakshmana. And therefore the accounts that Swami writes of Hanuman and Lakshmana, that Valmiki writes of Hanuman and Lakshmana, that Tulsidas, that Kamban writes, all will match. Because there was this harmony. Where this disharmony was there? You know, later on even Sugriva says the same thing, that my brother Vali, you know, after he's dead, we will come to that later, maybe next week. Sugriva says that, I never knew that my brother had so much of love and devotion to Rama. His anger had masked it. Now, because of these negative qualities, you are not able to have this harmony in thought, word and deed. So, though Vali is a very, very noble soul, to everybody else he appears to be a very bad soul. And we must therefore, whenever we see this discrepancy in Swami's Ramayana and any other Ramayana, we should be grateful to Swami for giving us a glimpse into who those characters truly were. Because all others are just an expression or an extrapolation of their body and mind.
I think many, many times Swami also would say this, you know, when we would see somebody really pining and crying and praying for something, well, Swami will be very casual about it, and Swami will sometimes even remark, I know what exactly they want. And you know, I'm giving them that. I know what is the real desire behind it. And I think Professor Nanjunde used to often tell us, when Swami was very upset with a set of boys, and those boys came to Nanjunde sir and cried in front of him and said, sir, please tell Swami that we are very sorry and Swami Different should take thing. Us back. And he went and told Swami, and Swami very beautifully remarked, Swami asked him, Nanjundia, do you have more compassion than me? And you know, that was the point. He couldn't speak anything more than that. But then Swami explained, see Nanjundia, my heart is like butter. The slightest of heat, it'll melt off. Because that is God's heart. If you can feel so much compassion, imagine I'm 1,000 times more compassionate. The little bit of warmth in a devotee's heart will melt this butter. If this butter is solid, it only means there is no warmth around. And you know, that's precisely because Swami was always responding to the real thought. Sometimes some devotees will appear angry against Swami. Sometimes some devotees will feel like, oh Swami, I want to just get out of here. But you will see Swami will keep holding to that devotee, because Swami will be responding to the truest desire of that soul.
Feelings, huh?
Not necessarily the words which come out in anger or the actions which come out in anger. So I think very, very beautifully what you said was absolutely true, because Swami is throughout this Ramayana in the form of Ramakatha Swami is bringing out the true nature of each of those characters, be it Maricha, be it Kaikeyi, be it, you know,
Vali, Sugriva,
all of these characters. I think that even Ravana for that matter, where sometimes Swami speaks of Ravana in a different light, not really as a demon as we see him. I think it's because Swami is talking of the yearnings of that soul too, not just the mind and the body.
See, Swami says, my life is my message. And in the discourse we now heard Swami saying that the Shreya Marg, the true spiritual path, is the ability to see good even in the bad. Actually, Prem, if you read the Ramakatha Rasavahini, can you come out with who is the villain? There seems to be no villain, because while an act is considered villainous, the moment you start labeling the perpetrator of the act as a villain, Swami comes and redeems him or her. You know, there seems to be no villain at all. Ravana is redeemed, Kaikeyi is redeemed, Vali is redeemed. Who is the villain? There is no villain. Who is bad? There is no bad. Everyone is good. And that is what Swami says. There is no bad in creation. It's all in your vision. In Srishti there is nothing negative. It's only in your drishti that is negative. So coming back here, you know, Sugriva comes back, he's battered and bruised, and he goes to Rama, and as you said, in the next page itself, he starts saying, Rama, what is this? You let me down, I thought you will do, and what is this? And he has now forgotten that Rama has the supreme knowledge, he knows everything, whatever he does is the best, whether I get smashed, it doesn't matter, whether I am crowned, it doesn't matter, because just now he has expressed, you know, Rama, me getting smashed by Vali, and me being exiled is all a boon because I got to see you. A person who expressed that, the next day he's coming and saying, Lord, how did you allow me to get bashed when you said you will support me? And then Swami says, Rama, is again very consoling to Sugriva. He comes to Sugriva and he gently massages him all over his hand, leg and body. And as Rama's hand moves tenderly over Sugriva's body, in an instant all the pain is gone. And I think to some extent we have also noticed this with Swami. We come to Swami loaded with our problems, with our pains, with our travails. And whether he moves his hand over us or not, just looking at him in one moment, we feel our heart lightening up, we feel all our problems gone, we feel our sicknesses vanish. And if we get that Pada Namaskar, aha, everything seems to melt into nothingness. That is the kind of experience that Sugriva has, and he, all his pain is gone and he's again filled with joy supreme. And you know, again in an instant later, Sugriva starts saying, "Oh Lord, what a embrace this is. If I have this in life, I don't need anything else. Why should I even bother? You're there with me." But this time Rama's response is a little different.
Right, I think immediately this time Rama, as you said, he starts telling that Sugriva, calm down. You know, this is how people react when they get something beneficial for themselves from God. But this is not true devotion. Don't get carried away to think that this is devotion and this is what you want. I know exactly what is the true emotion behind it and I'm responding to that. I think probably we should, you know, read exactly the words which Swami
has said. Yes, very, very powerful.
Because so beautifully Swami has put. You know, Swami says, Rama did not pay heed to his words. He said, "These words of yours are but reflections of passing thoughts. You spoke like this when you had a vision of my power and glory. I do not attach much value to them." I mean, you can really feel Swami speaking these words, you know, as to us. "For I care more for feelings that rise in the heart. There are many great devotees who forget everything when they experience the sport and supreme might of God and believe that there is nothing higher than God. But after some time, or when their mental cravings do not bear fruit, they develop doubts even about what they experienced or saw. These are the veils that hide the curtains that distort the truth in the mind of those with weak faith. I know how it all happens, and so I do not attach much value to these sentiments. You have to get ready to confront your brother once again." Right? So that's why the story. But you know, so beautifully, as I said, I could feel Swami speaking these words to us. Because how many times it has happened, you know, when you're sitting in a bhajan, I don't know how many devotees can relate to that, when you're sitting in a bhajan, some bhajan really stirs your heart, Swami is sitting in front of you, and you know, that devotion is surging from within, and Swami, whatever happens, I will be with you, whatever it takes, I will always live for you. You know that the emptiness of that feeling sometimes. Because the next moment prasadam does not come to you, you start getting restless. You know, you're sitting there. I think how many times you have felt this in Swami's presence.
And how many times have we seen people pour out their devotion and state, make grandiose statements. Like, "Swami, this life is only for you. I will never let go of you. All I seek is surrender at your feet." And Swami's response would be, he would bend his head a little, clutch his hair and say, "Intamandi chusanra," meaning, "I have seen these many people say this." You know, Shirdi Baba pointed to a mango tree and said, "See how many flowers are there, how many fruits will come of that." Right. Swami would point to his flowery hair and say, "These many I have seen giving these very same dialogues, but let me see how many stay on." A little anecdote here, you know, when I joined higher secondary school, even to this day he is there, the physics teacher, Sairam sir, we call him Sairam sir. His name is Sairam, S.N. Sairam. And in 11th, when he had asked me what was my goal, what was my objective to join this higher secondary school, I told him that, "Sir, I want to dedicate my life for Swami. I want to stay with Swami always." He told me a statement which somehow never left me. I always kept ruminating over it. In fact, in the article that I wrote about him also, that statement has come in because it's an unforgettable statement. And the statement that he said was, "Arvind, it is easy to dedicate your life to Swami in 12th standard. Let me see if you have the same dedication at the end of your MSc also." And towards the end of my post-graduation, I was able to understand what he was meaning. As a child, you're free, you don't have any responsibilities, easy to make statements. As you start growing up, as they say, as you start maturing, as you start seeing how the world is, having seen all that, are you still able to hold on? That is really a challenge. I really feel that's a very, very wise statement. And, you know, later on I went back to him and I also told him, I said, sir, I would still like to dedicate my life to Swami. But honestly speaking, sir, I don't think that my dedication today is as pure as my dedication was in my 11th grade. Because it's easy to promise, it's easy when you're overwhelmed to do that. Again, the key is about perseverance. If we are able to persevere, from my own life, I feel, you know, without, I hope it doesn't sound like a boast, but I just feel that what we decide in the intensity of feeling, if we are able to persevere even 5 to 10% of that, our Lord is so compassionate that He accepts that and gifts us with rewards that are worth the 100% of dedication. If only that 5% we are able to sustain. That is what I feel, and that is what I recollected as I was reading this part in the Ramkatha Savahini.
Absolutely. I think this probably is a good time to tell a whole lot of youngsters who listen to us, you know, especially teenagers and those in 20s, because this is a time when you're filled with ambition and you're filled with idealism more than ambition. So when something like this comes, when you an opportunity to be with Swami, serve Swami, because I've heard a lot of 20-year-olds saying that we want to come and live in the ashram, we want to stay. It is definitely not wrong. We're not trying to tell them that, discourage you by saying that, you know, don't get carried away. But something which, as you said, our teachers used to tell us, you know, I remember some of my teachers telling me that there is something called a midlife crisis, which comes probably at, you know, 35, 40, or it varies with people. What it is it's at a point in time when you look back at life and look forward with a sense of equality. You know, when you're young, you have your whole life in front of you. So there is the feeling that I have everything to do. You know, you have a lot of money. You don't plan when you have a lot of money. You know, when you have immense wealth, you're not going to budget.
Same way when you have immense energy, you don't.
Right. But when you come to a point where you're looking back and looking forward equally, you've spent equal number of years behind, and in a sense, an equal number of years lies ahead of you. That is the time when you ask yourself, have I done enough? Have I have enough to, you know, carry me forward?
Basically, it's like in the start of journey, you feel, as you said, whole life in front of you. In midlife, you want to look back and feel, right, have I done at least half the journey?
Right. Have I come far enough? You know, have I achieved enough? Do I have enough things to show people? And do I have it in me to take it forward? I think that is when idealism gets shaken. So it is not wrong to be carried by idealism, but be aware that these are the things which will come ahead of you. And as you know, as so beautifully this incident shows, that when some nice things happen to you, when Swami's grace comes on our life and some nice things happen, it's very easy to say that, Swami, I want to dedicate my life to you. But when those challenges come, when you see that Swami is standing by you and letting you pass through challenges, are we able to see Swami's love then? Are we able to see Swami's grace then? I think that is what actually filters a true devotee from, you know, somebody who's probably fond of Swami, who takes a liking for Swami. Because that is why Swami would very often say that, why is Kunti praying that, Swami, give me more difficulties, give me more difficulties? Because that is a real devotee who has seen that when I am able to hold on to you, when I am having pain, that is when my real devotion is springing out.
You know, Kunti's story inspires me. I'm reminded of a little joke. You know, there was this boy who goes and makes a phone call, and there's a person overhearing this conversation, and the boy says, "Madam, are you happy with the boy who is serving you at your home?"
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Yes, I am." He says, "Madam, I know all the things that he does. I promise to do all those things that he's doing at half the price at which he's doing."
Okay.
And she says, no, it's no problem, I want to have that boy itself. He says, "Madam, not only will I do all that he is doing, I'll do additional, I'll get you vegetables also, I will do this also, I will do that also, at half the price."
Okay.
And she says, no, beta, I'm happy with him, no need. Then he says, "Okay, madam," and keeps the phone down. As he's paying and he's walking off, the shop guy says, "Hey, listen, if you're in search of a job, I couldn't help but overhear the conversation, I don't mind employing you." He says, no, I'm already employed. "Then, I actually work for the lady. I was just checking how happy she is with me." You know? So, I feel Kunti was doing the same with the Lord. Saying, "Lord, give me more and more troubles." Because it was almost like the Lord will himself feel that, no Kunti, you know, I have given you enough, no need. I don't want, let it be like that. I feel that is how we should do a self audit, and as Kunti rightly shows, it is only during times of troubles and tribulations, trials and tribulations, that we will be able to really show the Lord what our worth is. So therefore, while we welcome joys and happiness, we should also welcome trials and tribulations, because they are the ones that help us grow. As Swami would often say in his discourses, Nasukhat labhyate sukham. You will never get happiness out of happiness. Which means, in order to taste true happiness, dukkham or sorrow or trials are a must.
Right, and the other obvious thing which you see is, you know, the difference is between, I think we've done one entire satsang on that. Finally, the question is, are you choosing God or are you choosing what comes from God? Because good and bad, right and wrong, and, you know, pleasant and unpleasant, all that comes from Swami. As long as we say, I want this and I don't want that, you're not choosing the giver, you're only choosing what is given. And the moment you start choosing the giver, it becomes immaterial what comes from him. You know, as we always say, whatever Swami gives is prasadam. As we spoke once, if Swami is going to materialize a gold chain for you, it's as much a materialization. Or in the same place, if Swami materializes a black rope, black thread which he's going to put around you, that's again a materialization. Both are equally Swami's prasadam. But I think we all have it in our mind
that a gold chain is more valuable than a black
thread. Gold chain is more valuable, and when it is on your neck, you are having a special grace of Swami. And probably, you know, these are the subtle lessons that Swami has taught through this Ramakatha Rasvani. And you know, when we break it up and when we see this, that is when we realize that so many subtle things Swami is passing on to us through these stories. That's why it's not a Ramayana which you always knew. This is not a Ramayana which you have always read.
And you know what, Prem, speaking of subtle, I feel this is the true subtle body or sukshma sharira of Swami. His writings, his discourses, his teachings. When we had gone to the Himalayas, and one of us, you know, there was this kind of a guru, they used to call him Kedar Baba. Somebody told him, Kedar Baba, our guru is gone. Our guru is gone. What do we do now? Whom do we follow? His eyes flared up and he said, Murkh, you fool. Kya avatar roop hai? Is the avatar a form? Avatar shabd hai. He said, the words of the avatar is the avatar. And I feel today we are not able to see the physical form of Swami. Many of us. Some of us are able to see that also. Some of the people are blessed. They are able to see for moments or see whatever. But when they say sukshma sharira or the subtle body of Swami, this is a subtle body. The body of literature that he has left behind for us. The body of discourses that he has left behind for us. That is the sukshma. Because even to this day when we read, hear that, we get to feel him. We are able to feel his presence and the joy that, Prem, you are feeling in your heart right now and I am feeling in my heart right now. Nobody can deny that. And that has come just by going through Ramakatha Rasavahini.
Which Swami wrote 4 decades ago.
Exactly.
And it's as fresh as it can be.
So I just feel that this, dear listeners, we are doing this, we did on Satyam Shyam Sundaram as well as these Vahinis, because of course it is benefiting us, but we also wish to communicate that you too get into this. Just like you wait for the satsang on this and listen to what is being spoken on the topic, why wait to receive it from somebody else? Why don't you directly go to the source? Spend some time reading the Ramakatha Rasavahini. Spend time listening to Bhagwan's discourses. I am sure you will find greater solace, greater wisdom than what faulty instruments like us will be able to read and convey second hand or, you know, masticated food. Directly have the banquet straight from Swami. Next week we shall continue how Sugriva goes and, you know, faces up Vali for a second time. Lot of beautiful messages there, a beautiful incident that takes place there, all that we shall keep for next week. This week, with a prayer to Swami that we are able to feel him in our heart every moment of our life, with a prayer to Hanuman that he grants us love and bhakti to our Swami just in the way that he has love and bhakti to Rama. We would like to bring this episode to a close. We shall be ending with a bhajan, on the other side of which the program Love to Love will be broadcast.
The దశరథ నందన రామ దయాసాగరామ
దశరథ నందన రామ దయాసాగరామ
దశరథ నందన రామ దయాసాగర దశముఖమర్దన రామ దైత్యకులాంచక రామ
దశముఖమర్దన రామ దైత్యకులాంచక రామ
దశముఖమర్దన రామ కులాంతక రామ
దశముఖ మర్దన రామ దైత్య కులాంతక రామ
లక్ష్మణ సేవిత రామ లక్ష్మీ మనోహర రామ దశముఖమర్దన రామ దైత్యకులాంతక రామ
దశముఖమర్దన రామ దైత్యకులాంతక రామ
లక్ష్మణ సేవిత రామ లక్ష్మీ మనోహర రామ
స్వరూపారామా
సుందర వదన
ಜಯನಂದನ ರಾಮ ದಯಾ ಸಾ